Ronda Rousey joins us on Sports Byline USA, MMA fighter and also the first UFC women's bantamweight champion. She became the first U.S. woman to earn an Olympic medal in judo at the Summer Olympics in Beijing. And she is the number one pound-for-pound female MMA fighter in the world. And she's written an interesting book about her life and her career. It's called Rousey, My Fight, Your Fight. And at the very beginning, it says, I am a fighter. To be a fighter, you have to be passionate. I have so much passion. It's hard to hold on and keep it all in me. That passion escapes as tears from my eyes, sweat from my pores, blood from my veins. So many people assume that I'm cold and callous. But the truth is, you need a big heart to fight. I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I have had it broken, too. I can compete with broken toes and stitches in my feet. I can take a hit without batting an eyelash, but I will burst into tears if a sad song comes on the radio. I'm vulnerable. That's why I fight. I just wondered, as you were writing this book, did you ever think that you would become a professional fighter?
It's an idea that started seeping into my mind around 2007, and I would kind of push it out of my mind and try not to think about it for as long as I could. And it wasn't until 2010 until I really embraced the idea. But my mom has a lot of great sayings. One of them is, you can't unhave a thought.
Ronda, one of the things that I know, you've had a tough life and everything. Was it hard for you to write this book, having to go back in and think about it and being able to put it into words?
Some things weren't easy, but the good thing is I wrote it with my sister, Maria Burns Ortiz, who just happens to be an award-winning sports journalist. And she was very brilliant when it came to thinking of what questions to ask and knowing what stories that a lot of people didn't know that should be told. And it's a lot easier for me to speak words from the heart to someone that I love that was there with me the whole time, you know?
Did you learn anything about yourself when you went back and got introspective and reviewed your life?
The whys behind things. I had to explain myself of why I would do certain things or why I put up with certain things or why certain events happened. And it's one thing to know that something happened and to move on with your life, but to have to explain yourself and your motivations behind everything was a little difficult, and it was very informing.
Your mother was such a great influence in your life. Tell me a little bit about her. What was the passion? What was the fire in her that she tried to transport over to you?
I don't know where it all comes from in her. to be honest, she is an entirely different animal. In fact, Animal was her nickname when she fought back in the day, like Animal from the Muppets, like the drummer. And I heard a lot of stories of her back in the day when she was competing, and everyone used to joke that she had angry leftover. She would walk out to the fight, and she would win. She would crush her, and just walk off still mad, still pissed off. Was I walk off all smiles and giggles and bouncing around. My mom had angry leftover. And I don't know where it all comes from, but I'd like to know because she seems to have extra.
I think you know most people are developed by the things that happen early in their lives. And you had a lot of tough things. Your dad passed away. You had an eating disorder as well. How did you cope with those challenges in the early part of your life?
I had sports and athletics and fighting. And I grew up in North Dakota, and my mom's partner in her consulting business is actually Spirit Lake Sioux, Native American. And he had he told us something very interesting. After he lost his son, he told my mom that whatever you end up doing the year after you lose a close loved one is what you end up doing for the rest of your life. And that's just whatever all of us were doing in that year after we lost him is what we're still doing to this day. And my mom, she was working three jobs and trying to keep the lights on and everything like that. And even though my mom could have retired long ago, she found her solace in her work. And that's all she wants to do. She loves to work, and she keeps working past retirement because that's what she loves. And I really found my solace in athletics. I was swimming all the time, and even though I ended up moving on from swimming because it reminded me a lot of my dad, I just didn't get that much joy in it without him, I still found my solace in athletics, and that's what I do to this day.
I know you've said that you were a daddy's girl, and so that was particularly tough on you. And your mom being involved with judo, introducing you to it and encouraging you to follow that path as well. Tell me a little bit about her career.
My mom was the first American to ever win the World Championships in judo back in 1984, and that was while she was a single mother working as an engineer and getting her PhD all at the same time.
I also am seeing a piece on HBO Real Sports in which you were out signing your book, Rousey, My Fight, Your Fight. There was a girl that came up to you. I thought that that was a very touching and telling story, and it really touched you deeply. Tell everybody about that incident.
I meet some girls and some people sometime that they hand me notes because we don't have that much time to talk, and I read them later. And some of them are very sweet, and some of them are just heart-wrenching stories. And I don't like to go into particulars because it feels like it seems like a very private thing, and I don't want to share what they share with me so much. But it's a lot. It's heavy on the heart for them, and it's very humbling to see how our paths end up crossing.
What is the perception of Ronda Rousey, do you think, and how is it similar to or different from what it actually is?
What I think people perceive me as, it's hard to describe without swearing. I don't know if I'm allowed to swear on here. But in general, I think, I don't know, people think that I'm just really a big, how do I say it without swearing? a lot of people think I'm just a really mean girl, I guess. A mean girl that's really full of herself and arrogant is what I think the perception is. And I like to say that I'm not arrogant. I just have an accurate self-assessment. Just because I happen to be awesome, it's not a bad thing.
You know, from the piece that I saw last night and also from watching you, I feel that that's just part of a professional persona. Am I correct in that observation?
I can't control how I'm perceived. I could just do what I'm the best of the world at and try to do it as well as possible, and now people take that as beyond my control. And so whatever they think, is that I'm not going to invest any happiness in it.
Tell me a little bit about your fighting style in that I've got a quote here, a decorated judoka. Rousey typically grinds and grounds an opponent with tosses and sweeps, then seeks to finish with strikes or submissions. And from top position, she usually attacks with punches from the side control. In rear position, she often secures a back mount and attacks with head strikes. Does that describe your fighting style correctly?
I guess kind of. I mean, it's hard to sum up a style and saying what you would do for sure in every situation, because any one of those situations could have been a little bit different and I could have done something differently. I would just say that I have an extremely dominant, aggressive, pressuring fight style.
You have a telling move, and that is the arm bar. Tell me how that developed, Rhonda.
My mom actually taught me how to do arm bars back when I was like 12, and she was the original armbar lady before me because she tore her knees out when she was 16 years old back in the 80s, you know, or 70s, I guess it was. They didn't really have much in the way of orthopedic science back then. So she had to either quit or change how she fought. And so she went from doing mostly throws to mostly groundwork. And she had to deal with a lot of unfair refereeing and stuff back then, as I did when I was older. And she used to always say that the arm bar is the most definite way to win. She would say, if you throw someone, they cannot count it. If you pin someone, they can make you stand up. If you're choking them, they can make you stand up and that person take a deep breath. But if you arm bar somebody and you break their arm and they still beat you with one arm, you deserve to lose. That's what she used to tell me, while other kids are probably hearing how to do their own laundry.
I also sense, too, that you reminded me an awful lot of a very young Mike Tyson. What I mean by that is that when I covered some of his early fights, I remember he was a bull coming out of the corner, and I see the same thing in you. I mean, you just overwhelm your opponent, and I think that's done by design, but it's also done by your nature. Am I correct?
Well, it's because I know I can maintain a certain pace for 5 rounds. There's no need to save any energy or have a feeling out period, and I come out in the pace of MMA, much like the same pace I'd had when I had judo. And I have to thank a lot of those unfair referees that were really trigger happy to giving me a, you know, a passivity penalty, but not the other girls. I always had to have a much faster pace than anyone else. And I'm really thankful for it now.
What did you have to do to overcome the hurdles and the challenges that had prevented anyone, a woman, but in particular you as well, from getting into competition in the MMA?
I just had to be impossible to ignore. I never purposely called Dana to try and get contact with him. I just tried to put so much content out there and to get so much interest in what I was doing that it would be impossible for him or anyone else in the sport to ignore me.
You are very appealing on a lot of different levels. Why do you think that is? What is it about the audience for MMA and other athletes, and even into the entertainment field now, that really makes you so appealing to that?
Well, I think if people want to see politics, they'll turn on the news. And if they're watching MMA, they want to see athletics and entertainment, and that's what I try to give them. I don't try to act like a politician and say everything so perfectly that in any order, in any context, that no one could possibly criticize it. It's not about avoiding criticism. It's about entertainment and speech of athleticism.
I know that Rowdy Piper was someone instrumental in your life. I've known him for a long while, too, and I'm just wondering if you could talk a little bit about what he has meant to your career.
Well, I always liked Rowdy Piper because he was one of the greatest heels of all time, and it was the way that he spoke that captured people. Just as much as the way that he wrestled. And he didn't have to be liked. In fact, it was better that he wasn't. And that's where he really got his success from. And I always, from the beginning of my MMA career, I wanted to adopt that model because every single chick out there was trying to be Batman. And no one was willing to be the Joker. And without an antagonist, the protagonist just sits around. It's the bad guy that generates the action and the interest. There's no comic book if there's no one to save Gotham from. And so I wanted to be that character that was missing.
I know you touched on it a little bit last night in the HBO Real Sports piece, and I'm just wondering, if I were a guy and I wanted to date Ronda Rousey, I think I might be intimidated a little bit, but you probably wouldn't be interested in somebody like that anyway. How hard is it for you to have a real life, a balanced life?
I mean, I'm pretty happy with my life right now.
Well, I meant from a social...
I mean, I know, from a social standpoint, if you had a young, successful, undefeated man athlete right on your show, would you be giving him a hard time for not having a boyfriend, or would you just call him a baller that's living the dream? I don't see why I have to explain myself for being single all the time.
No, I'm not asking you to explain yourself about it. I just wondered how hard it was to have a normal life given the fact that you have a lot of demands on you. Tiger Woods is the same way. I've known Tiger for a long time, and he once said to me that it's very hard to have a balanced life because everybody, Michael Jordan said the same thing. It's hard to have a balanced life because everybody wants a piece of you. So I was posing the question that way, Rhonda.
Well, a normal life isn't something that I ever thought. And to be honest, I don't even really know what this normal everyone speaks of is. I just know that I'm paying the bills. I don't have to worry about getting evicted. I took my dog to the vet today and didn't have to sacrifice my groceries for it. Like, I'm happy. And that's all the balance that I really need is I don't have to worry about me and my dog and end up back in my car.
We got about 30 seconds left. What do you want people to take away from this book, Rhonda?
What I really want them to take away from it is that there's no fight or obstacle that you can't overcome.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us. This book is a wonderful read, by the way. I've had a chance to go through it. It's called Rhonda, My Fight, Your Fight. Congratulations.